Hi everyone, welcome to EHS This Week's podcast for the week ending October the 17th. I'm Nicola DeCuna.
And I'm Allison Cranky.
And we're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety. So I'm going to start off with a story about safety. So a wide-ranging effort to improve fire and building safety in response to the deadly Bangladesh Rana Plaza building collapse in 2013 has resulted in more than 1,100 factory inspections in the country and more than 400 corrective action plans, according to officials. So the initiative, known as the Accord, consists of two global unions, eight Bangladeshi unions, and 189 companies. The participants signed a safety agreement shortly after an April 2013 building collapse that killed more than 900 workers at the Bangladeshi garment factory. The collapse prompted calls by U.S. lawmakers to take steps to improve safety in the garment industry. In a May 2013 letter to President Barack Obama, Representative Sandra Levin and George Miller said that the administration should lead an effort involving American and European retailers to pursue a universal standard guaranteeing basic workplace safety and fundamental worker rights. So in Bangladesh, the Accord identified more than 80,000 safety issues so far. A number of corrective actions, such as reducing weight loads and adhering to load management plans, have been implemented. Other safety measures include installing fire doors and automated fire alarm systems, establishing fire-protected exits, and strengthening building columns still have to be completed. So for more on this Accord, you can check out our resources section below.
Sounds like they definitely made some great steps forward, though.
Yes, definitely some improvements are being made. Now, Allison, I think you have a story coming out of Europe.
Yeah, so right now there are some very interesting developments unfolding in Europe regarding plans for tackling climate change. So the European Commission reached a milestone in an initiative they're calling Mayors Adapt, with 100 European cities now committed to taking part in the initiative. The European Union has existing initiatives in place that concentrate on cutting greenhouse gas emissions, but Mayors Adapt has been created in parallel with these prevention initiatives in order to focus on adaptation measures that realistically need to take place as well. Because cities are major centers of infrastructure and have large populations, they're particularly vulnerable to extreme weather events and other adverse effects of climate change. The idea behind this initiative is that local authorities need to play a key role in implementing measures to mitigate and adapt to climate change. The initiative was launched in March, and among the cities that have signed up so far are Barcelona, Copenhagen, Frankfurt, Glasgow, Lisbon, Munich, Naples, and Rotterdam. Mayors Adapt is aiming to increase support for local activities, provide a platform for greater engagement and networking by cities, and raise awareness about adaptation and the measures that are needed. So if you'd like to learn more about the initiative, you can find a link to their website in the resources section of this podcast. Also this week in Europe, the UK's Energy Secretary, Ed Davey, revealed that for the first time, the impacts of climate change will be integrated into the UK's next strategic defence and security review. He made that announcement at the Green Growth Summit at the European Parliament in Brussels, as he gears up for next week's big EU 2030 policy framework discussion.
What's this policy framework meeting about?
Well, next week, national leaders will be meeting to approve the EU's energy framework. They agreed back in March of this year that the framework would be decided upon by October at the very latest, and there's a critical need to agree on the approach for tackling climate change and developing a low-carbon energy system. Right now, there are several ambitious targets in the proposed framework, including a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions of at least 40% below the 1990 level by 2030. That would put the EU on track to meet its objective of cutting emissions by at least 80% by 2050. There's also a target of increasing the share of renewable energy to at least 27% and increasing energy efficiency by 30%. The good news is that these numbers aren't coming out of nowhere, and if there's agreement and commitment, they are absolutely achievable. There's been some really good progress made in recent years. So for example, new buildings use half the energy they did in the 1980s. So we'll have to wait and see what happens next week. But in the meantime, if you'd like to learn more about what's at stake and what's being done, you can visit the European Commission's website on climate action, which we've linked to in the resources section of this podcast. Nicola, you have a story for us from the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
Yes, so a commentary published in a special issue of the American Journal of Industrial Medicine declared that injuries and illnesses are significantly undercounted in the Bureau of Labor Statistics annual survey. So because of the undercounting, the Survey of Occupational Injury and Illnesses underestimates the number of injuries occurring in that country, which can have a detrimental effect on policy decisions, according to commentary authors Emily Spieler, who is the Edwin W. Hadley Professor of Law at Northwestern University School of Law in Boston, and Gregory Wagner, a senior advisor at NIOSH. So Spieler and Wagner state that the improvements are needed to make the Survey of Occupational Injuries and Illnesses a more useful and reliable tool for gauging safety. So So some of their suggestions include developing an alternate estimation system for occupational illnesses, so the current system only captures about 10%, supporting research into underreporting, and using alternative approaches that do not rely on employer reporting as the current system does. But despite the downsides of the survey, the commentary states that it does have value, including the ability to identify potential trends, such as increased proportion of cases that lead to restricted work rather than lost work days. Now, Allison, I think you have a breaking story on Ebola and workplace health and safety.
Yeah, so if you've been watching the news lately, you are probably aware of the latest developments in the Ebola outbreak that began in West Africa back in March of this year. There are a lot of important workplace health and safety questions that are being raised as frontline workers rush to contain the spread of this disease. And more of these questions are being asked now that two Dallas nurses who helped treat an Ebola patient have been diagnosed with the disease themselves. Safety rules related to the safe treatment of Ebola patients have been evolving ever since Ebola was first recognized in 1956 in Zaire. But these protocols are now being rigorously put to the test in the U.S., despite the fact that the staff treating the initial patient wore the appropriate PPE as recommended by the CDC at the time, they still contracted the disease. The required PPE included shoe covers, face shields, and an optional N95 mask. Isolation suits were also ordered, although nurses have since raised concerns about the skin on their neck being exposed. There are Canadian and U.S. officials who assure the public that they're absolutely prepared and they have adequate protocols in place should there be further cases of the disease diagnosed in North America. However, many frontline workers and their representatives still seem to have concerns. So this week, Linda Silas, president of Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions, met with Canadian Health Minister Rona Ambrose to talk about how hospitals need to do more to prepare and equip these frontline workers. The National Nurses Union is saying there is inadequate personal protective gear, training, and preparedness for nurses. There's certainly the hope that we are able to learn quickly from what has happened in Dallas, and Silas also spoke about using the experience of SARS and H1N1 to ensure that frontline workers are all informed and have received appropriate training. Obviously, the story is still developing, but hopefully an emphasis on worker safety, particularly for these nurses, continues to remain a priority. There are encouraging signs that this will be the case. In fact, Nicola, I think you have a story for us about a related PPE initiative.
Yes, so the U.S. Agency for International Development is looking for innovators who can help improve personal protective equipment, also known as PPE, and tools used by healthcare workers who are fighting what is being called the largest Ebola outbreak in history. So the initiative, Fighting Ebola, a Grand Challenge for Development, is working to identify innovations that will improve comfort while preserving the effectiveness of PPE, such as masks, gloves, and boots. So this equipment can become particularly uncomfortable in the hot and humid conditions that are common in West Africa, where the Ebola outbreak is taking place. According to the agency, the Grand Challenge will establish an open platform to crowdsource and foster ideas, a competition that will fund and test innovations for PPE, partnerships for rapid testing and deployment of the top solutions. The agency's administrator, Rajiv Shah, said the plan is to work with international partners and translate the expertise and ingenuity of scientists, innovators, engineers, and students from across the globe into real solutions. So some bold thinking and engagement can give healthcare workers the tools that they need to win this fight. So for more information on this challenge, you can find links in our resources section below.
And I think that's it for this week.
We hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week, everyone.